The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. And we'll start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the cover story headline, "The Money Follows the Science. Triangle's Robust Contract Research Cluster is amid a massive shift of power as companies jostle to control market share and vertical superiority." And the article begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with a second headline, "When the Big Get Bigger. Consolidation Ramps Up and Industry Spawned in the Triangle." Written by Zach Ezone. When Jim Dayton became the CEO of the Durham-based contract research organization BioAgilytics in 2013, he stepped into the role as employee number 49. At the time, the company was generating about $11 million annually as it helped pharmaceutical and biotechnology companies develop complex drugs such as cell and gene therapies. But BioAgilytics soon became one of the fastest-growing companies in an industry that saw rising levels of investment, and global investors noticed. Last year, Cinven, a private equity firm based in London, acquired BioAgilytics for more than $3.1 billion. When Dayton left the company in June, BioAgilytics had more than 1,000 employees and plans to hire hundreds more and surpass $1 billion in revenue. During the pandemic, a lot of funding went into biologics and trying to find cures for disease, Dayton says. We see high demand. And it's an example of how a CRO industry that essentially was born in the Triangle, led by juggernauts such as UNC Chapel Hill spin-out Quintiles and Duke Clinical Research Institute, is rapidly evolving. Cinven's move was one of many mergers and acquisitions last year involving CROs in the Triangle. Some of these deals involved private equity firms looking to invest in a growing part of healthcare, while others involved mergers between large companies looking to grab a larger share of the clinical trial market. The region has seen big deals before. In 2016, Quintiles merged with IMS Holdings in a $9 billion deal to create ICVIA, now the largest CRO in the world. A few years before that deal, Burlington's LabCorp expanded into the clinical research space with its $5.6 billion acquisition of Covance. But consolidation is likely to continue, partially driven by customer demand. Companies with deep North Carolina ties, such as Parexel, PPD, and PRA Health Sciences, were all acquired. For the Triangle, the stakes are high as it looks to maintain its lead in a prosperous industry that pulls millions of dollars into the market. Today, there's not really a one-stop shop where everybody does everything, Dayton says. You're going to see people trying to consolidate where they can add more services or add more geographies to support global customers. The big get bigger. While inflation this year is a concern, M&A activity ramped up in 2021 as biotechnology and smaller pharmaceutical companies received record levels of investment and an increased demand for CRO work, says David Bloom, partner and head of pharma services at the New York-based advisory firm Edgemont Partners. If you take these two growth factors, you get an exponential growth rate, and that has been driving a huge amount of demand for CRO services to the point at which it has outstripped the supply. There's more work than the CROs can actually perform, Bloom says. And so CROs are looking for ways to accelerate their growth, ways to increase their talent pool, and M&A is one of those. Several deals that took place last year involve companies that are among the top 10 largest CROs globally, a group that already occupies more than half of the clinical trial market. The top 10 largest CROs in the world, nearly all of which have offices in the Triangle, controlled about 57% of the overall outsourcing market in 2019, which was an increase of about 12% from 2012, according to a report from the Tufts Center for Study of Drug Development, a nonprofit research center at Tufts University in Boston. A 2021 report from the United Kingdom's Results International Group, an M&A advisory group focused on healthcare and technology, states the top 10 CROs occupied about two-thirds of the global clinical market in 2019. Although the numbers are different, the results show the space, the largest the results show the space the largest CROs occupy in the clinical trial market. In the largest CRO deal of 2021, Thermo Fisher Scientific acquired North Carolina's PPD for $17.4 billion. The deal moves Thermo Fisher into the clinical research space by acquiring one of the largest CROs in the industry with 26,000 employees globally, about 1,700 of which are in the Triangle and 1,800 in Wilmington. In a mega merger involving two CROs, Ireland's ICON acquired Raleigh's PRA Health Sciences for $12 billion to create a company of more than 30,000 employees. This combined entity, headquartered in Dublin, Ireland, expects to generate between $7.7 billion and $8.1 billion this year, an increase of about 43 to 46% over 2021, according to guidance ICON released in January. There were 107 deals last year involving biopharma services companies, which include CROs and other similar businesses, for a total deal value of $43.4 billion, according to a report KPMG released earlier this year. This was up from 78 deals valued at $6.6 billion in 2020 and 43 deals valued at $5.2 billion in 2019. These mergers and acquisitions took place in several ways. In addition to strategic deals that give companies new therapeutic expertise or broaden their geographic reach, many transactions involved private equity firms acquiring CROs with the intention of scaling them up to sell later. Private equities are much more nimble to take those in, grow them quickly to a point where they can sell them to a strategic, says Steve Saplital, KPMG's National Life Sciences Advisory Leader. Corporate deals don't want to be in the roll-up strategy. They want that scale that they can tuck into their larger operations. One of the largest private equity deals involved a company with a significant presence in North Carolina. In November, EQT Private Equity and Goldman Sachs Asset Management completed their acquisition of Parexel, which has nearly 800 employees in the Triangle and 19,000 globally, from the company's previous private equity owners. This change in private ownership didn't affect Parexel's management team, although it has added a few new board members or the size and scale of the company, Parexel CEO Jamie McDonald says. But the company has access to dry powder, he says, should it pursue additional acquisitions. The amount of consolidation and investment among CROs, McDonald says, is a sign of a well-performing industry. People see the CRO industry from an investment standpoint as being a long-term asset and being strategically important in biotech and pharma globally, McDonald says. Filling gaps. As these larger CROs continue to grow larger, small and mid-sized companies are positioning themselves for specialized roles in the clinical trial space. Larger CROs tend to focus on major pharmaceutical companies with huge pipelines rather than small biotechs with a handful of drugs they're pursuing. The big CROs have gotten so large they focus on a certain part of the market, Bloom says. It's opened up this window, created headroom for smaller and mid-sized CROs to compete. The Cary-based CRO, Allucent, formerly known as Cato SMS, has seen significant growth through its specialized focus. Backed by a private equity investment in late 2018, the company completed four acquisitions over the last few years that have increased the size of the company from about 130 employees to more than 1,000, says CEO Dr. Mark Goldberg. After the 2018 investment and Goldberg joining in 2019, the company focused on acquisitions that would help it serve its intended customer base, small and mid-sized biotech companies. The company based its focus on shifts taking place in drug development. The money follows the science, he says. That was absolutely part of our strategic thinking as we saw the inflow of capital to support the science that was being done in those companies. Funding from venture capital sources for life sciences companies has grown from $8.8 billion in 2012 to $47 billion last year, according to a report from the ICVIA Institute for Human Data Science. And last year, nearly 100 biotechs raised money through initial public offerings, or IPOs, which was the highest over at least the last 40 years, according to IPO data from finance professor Jay Ritter at the University of Florida's Warrington School College of Business. This additional funding toward biotech comes as those companies take on a larger share of drug development. According to data from ICVIA, the ICVIA Institute for Human Data Science, about 59% of clinical trials started last year were sponsored by emerging biopharma companies. These emerging companies tend to consist of smaller teams that rely more on outsourcing as they don't have the same internal sources as larger pharmaceutical companies. But despite their reliance on outsourcing, small biopharma companies reported feeling underserved by the top global CROs in survey results McKinsey & Company released in June. McKinsey surveyed 80 companies, including both large pharma and small biopharma, that have worked with the top 10 global CROs and found that the smaller firms reported being less satisfied in all 14 metrics measured, including areas like study design and site selection, than their larger counterparts. Because of this kind of dynamic, smaller CROs, such as Durham-based Roe, view the consolidation taking place among larger CROs as a potential opportunity. Roe completed its own acquisition, the first since the company was founded in 1984, in December through a deal with the European CRO DocuMeds. Roe reached a point where this sort of global geographic reach was necessary to serve its clients, Chief Operating Officer Tara Gladwell says. Through the deal, the company added 70 employees, which helped support the growth the company has seen in recent years after focusing on working with smaller biotech companies. We definitely doubled down on that emphasis over the last 5 years, and we've seen growth in the company with doing that, Gladwell says. Lexidus Pharma Services, founded in 2011, also found growth in recent years in its specialized area of drug development. Lexidus works with companies pursuing treatments and therapeutics in ophthalmology. When CEO George Magrath joined the company in August 2020, it had about 45 employees. Now it has 150. The company in July was acquired by QHP Capital, the management company that spun out of Raleigh's NovaQuest Capital Management private equity unit. The private equity backing will support the company as it takes on more complex clinical trials, Magrath says. Lexidus hit a tipping point, Magrath says. We were doing quality work and built a reputation which created an organic flow of business. The number of people needed to run studies was dramatically increasing. Moving forward. After a banner year for life sciences deals, the pace of transactions has slowed down in 2022 as companies hesitate to move forward with mergers or acquisitions amid uncertain market conditions. KPMG's Sapleton says deal volume is down about 15% to 30% in the life sciences sector in 2020 from last year, although transactions involving CROs are probably on the lower end of that range. The deals that are taking place are on the private equity side rather than large corporate transactions like those Thermo Fisher and Icon completed last year. The slowdown comes as funding for biotechs and the number of companies completing IPOs has declined, but Bloom at Edgemont says this is unlikely to cause long-term issues for CROs due to the large fundraisers biotechs completed over the last few years. These funding windows come and go, Bloom says. I'm pretty optimistic that there will be enough funding. There will be another funding window, and biotech will raise more capital. If you look historically, the CROs have grown consistently year over year for the last 30 years. This means the role of CROs in drug development could continue to grow as smaller biotechs continue to take a more central role in drug development and a shift toward outsourcing increases. By 2023, CROs are projected to penetrate nearly half of the clinical trial market, up from only about one-third of the market in 2014. In 2018, drug developers spent an estimated $86 billion on all contracted R&D services, which was more than four times as high as what these companies spent internally, according to a report from the Tufts Center for Study of Drug Development. Researchers at Tufts also found that study initiation cycle time is 77 days faster in studies run by CROs rather than studies run directly by drug developers. Further consolidation between CROs could be a way to drive further efficiencies in drug development, Goldberg says. The launch prices of drugs grew about 20% annually between 2008 and 2021, according to a study released in June in the Journal of the American Medical Association. The clinical trial business endeavor today continues to be challenging, expensive, and relatively slow, Goldberg says. Humanity would benefit from an industry that gets the job done faster and less expensively. Additionally, the adoption of decentralized clinical trials during the pandemic will continue to spur acquisitions as companies seek technologies that grow their ability to run virtual studies. But as the role of CROs grows in drug development, there are some potential concerns with continued consolidation. For instance, Adrian Hernandez, the executive director at Duke Clinical Research Institute, the largest academic CRO, says maintaining competitiveness could become a challenge. There are worries about certain services not as value conscious in terms of pricing as they could be, Hernandez says. There's always the potential that jobs flow out of the Triangle as companies combine operations, create efficiencies, and trim headcount. So far, this doesn't appear to be an issue, as companies such as BioAgilytics plan to hire hundreds of additional employees in the Triangle. Laura Gunter, president of the North Carolina Biosciences Organization, says the ecosystem that turned the Triangle into a CRO hub will continue to attract companies. This includes companies that are not CROs but operate in a similar space, like Science 37 or Thread Research, which are technology companies focused on supporting decentralized clinical trials. In December, Science 37 announced it would relocate its headquarters to the Triangle, and Thread has grown through three acquisitions since November. Vivian Doling, Vice President of Emerging Company Development at the North Carolina Biotechnology Center, notes that ensuring the Triangle has a pipeline to clinical research talent will be key to continuing to build out this ecosystem. In June, the commercial real estate firm CBRE ranked the Triangle area as the number 6 labor market for life sciences jobs, behind Boston, Washington, D.C., San Francisco, New York, and San Diego. And that market is only expected to grow. When Dayton, the former BioAgilytics CEO, left a previous job with a pharmaceutical company in 2000, less than 2% of that company's pipeline was of large molecule drugs or biologics. Now those drugs make up more than 50% of the market. These drugs, like cell and gene therapies, are more expensive, but Dayton says they have the ability to cure diseases, thus putting the Triangle front and center in a vital part of the healthcare industry. I expect you'll see a tremendous amount of cures over the next decade, Dayton says. Over the next 20 years, there will be more advances that will take place than in the history of mankind from a medicine perspective. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by managing editor Dane Huffman. Carey firm lands big federal deal. A Carey company with NC State University roots is in growth mode after landing a major contract with the U.S. government. Atmospheric Plasma Solutions produces a 35-pound device that uses sophisticated technology to break up and remove coatings such as paint. And that's important in situations such as maintaining U.S. Navy ships, which require plenty of coating to protect the vessels from the sea, but which need repairs to prevent corrosion. This is a precise tool, company president Glenn Astolfi says. It can go to where the corrosion starts and where it hides and address that before corrosion gets out of control. The device is also helpful in protecting and maintaining wind turbines and is currently being used on 4 continents for wind energy, Astolfi says. Pete Yancey started Atmospheric Plasma Solutions in 2005, based on his work as a master's and PhD student at NC State. The company has grown to 20 employees now, but the pandemic packed a punch. New CEO Scott Meller says revenue exceeded $1 million in 2021, but that was down from previous years. Details of the contract remain to be finalized, but the plan is for APS to deliver 90 systems over a 24-month period for around $10 million. The federal deal is for only one of the company's products, but APS leaders say the deal will be transformative. Having this contract is a vote of confidence for the company, Meller says. Arkansas Bank makes move in Triangle. Yet another bank is showing interest in the Triangle. Encore Bank of Arkansas has named Denise Sherd Bennett, a former Wells Fargo executive, as its Triangle Market President, with a mission to grow its commercial banking clientele. Encore plans to have a team of up to a dozen people in the market, but Bennett says titles don't really matter. We're going to hire very entrepreneurial bankers, she says. Former president heads to Raleigh. W will be in town on September 14. Biz hears the 43rd president is coming to town to deliver a keynote speech at the local chapter of Boy Scouts of America's annual Friends of Scouting Luncheon at the PNC Arena. On the same day, George W. Bush will sit down with Pulitzer Prize winning author John Meacham to launch Wake Forest University's face-to-face speaker forum at the Lawrence Joel Veterans Memorial Coliseum. The forum is in its second season. Bush is coming to Raleigh at the request of Robert Ingram, the former head of GSK and the current general partner of Durham's Hatteras Venture Partners. Ingram was honored by the Okinichi Council last year when former Duke University basketball coach Mike Krzyzewski spoke. This year's Okinichi Council's top honor is going to O. Temple Sloan Jr. of Trail Creek Investments and the founder of General Parts International Auto Store, which was bought by Advance Auto Parts. Rialto owner looks to step back. Bill Peoples, who turned the Rialto Theater into a much-loved venue at Five Points in Raleigh, is looking for someone new to lead it. Peoples says that during the COVID-19 shutdowns, he realized he loved being with friends and yearned to travel. I realized that all I did was work, and I'm not getting any younger, says Peoples, who grew up in Raleigh. So it is time to enjoy the future I have in front of me, enjoying myself and the company of others and travel when it is once again safe. Peoples says he has been in discussions with others since April about running the Rialto. So far, I do not have confidence in any one person who can operate the Rialto as good or better than I, he adds. Who knows, maybe today or tomorrow I will meet that person or a group of people. Peoples does not own the building, which has a tax value of $1.3 million. Growing town of Sanford getting new mayor. Rebecca Wyhoff Salmon was selected Sanford's new mayor on July 26 as the Democrat ran unopposed. Salmon, who has served on the city council since 2011, will replace Chet Mann, mayor since 2013. Mann cited wanting to spend more time with his family and his business as reasons for not running again. While other small cities across North Carolina have been losing residents, Sanford has steadily grown through the years and has attracted major investments from life sciences companies and residential home builders. The Lee County city is home to about 30,000 residents. And finally, Durham Clinical Trial Firm moves into Europe. A growing Durham company that runs clinical trial sites has made its first move into Europe. After expanding through U.S. acquisitions to more than 30 trial sites in 14 states, Velocity Clinical Research has acquired Clinical Research Hamburg in Germany for an undisclosed amount. The company says it has a pipeline of deals set up to further expand in Europe by the end of the year. As a clinical trial site operator, Velocity works with contract research organizations, or CROs, and pharma and biotech companies that often rely on conducting global studies when developing and evaluating their products. Velocity's growth accelerated last year after the London-based private equity firm GHO Capital acquired the company from its previous owner, Navi Med Capital. Prior to the change in ownership, Velocity operated 14 sites. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the continuing series, 52 Shades of Success. The headline, Devil Dog Mentality. Retired Marines Rich and Amy DePiro lead an IT services firm that has seen exponential growth, revenue growth in just a few years. Story by Connie Gentry. About this project, the 52-week project showcases accomplishments, challenges, and opportunities of individuals and businesses run by people of color, women, immigrants, veterans, representatives from the LGBTQ+ community, and a few other groups forwarding the mission of diversity, equity, and inclusion in the greater Raleigh-Durham metro area. The project also will delve into important trends and issues relating to DEI. At Two Dog Digital, long-term customer contracts are history. Admittedly, that's a radical approach in the technology industry, but owner CEO Rich DePiro is convinced it's the right move, and with a 100% renewal rate among the company's customers, he's not concerned about switching to month-to-month agreements. In the 6 years we've been in business, we've lost three customers. Two were bought by larger companies, so they no longer needed our services, and the third was a mutual decision between us and the client that it just wasn't the right fit, DePiro says. Existing long-term contracts will run their course and then transition to monthly renewals. It's a no-nonsense, full-disclosure approach that flies in the face of bait-and-switch contracts that, in his estimation, have become all too prevalent. It harkens back to the leadership style he honed across his 8 years in the Marine Corps. DePiro and his wife, Amy, also a Marine Corps vet, founded the company in 2016 intent on creating IT services and support that would seamlessly blend into their clients' businesses, which run the gamut from one-person entrepreneurs to $30 million businesses to legal firms with 500 attorneys spread across multiple states. The company name is a reference to the Marine Corps, known as the Devil Dogs, or Tufel Hunden, because of their tenacity in keeping protected ground secure during the World War I Battle of Belleau Wood. Rich is the IT master behind the systems and protocols. Amy leads operations and finances, plus runs a real estate business on the side. Two things I found missing from IT services were ethics and affordability, says Rich Shapiro, who spent 37 years working in the industry. There's a huge push in the market to charge $300 per endpoint per month, and that means smaller and mid-sized businesses can't afford to get the services they need. Everybody is pushing for higher prices with lower service, and that goes against what we believe. His goal? Make a profit, but do so with a culture steeped in expertise, integrity, and personal connections with customers as well as employees. Over the last 3 years, we've had 200% growth each year, and in 6 years, we've gone from $40,000 to roughly $1 million, he says. The escalation in growth coincides with the arrival 3 years ago of Dave Henderson, director of sales, when revenue was topping out at $123,000. It's a fact DePiro is quick to highlight, as he also emphasizes that a traditional sales and marketing strategy is not how they build the business. The extent of their marketing investment last year was purchasing business cards for their six-person team. Henderson attributes much of the new business to customer referrals. The easiest sale for me is being able to tell a potential customer, we become your IT department. We're not just some company you call and email. We are your department, he says, noting they are on site whenever asked or needed, as well as frequent visits to maintain camaraderie. That was particularly true during the pandemic, when the company continued to support clients even when those businesses were shut down and in some cases unable to keep their accounts current. We got bigger during COVID, DePiro says, noting it was due in part to their capability to be responsive and effective. For one customer, the shutdown meant the work the company did came to a standstill unless they could get all of their homebound associates online for documentation reviews. We were able to attach them to our systems and had all of their 200 employees back up and running in under 24 hours, he says. For that client, Two Dog Digital facilitated secure remote work for the associates through COVID, but there were other clients for whom remote work was not an option. COVID hurt our profitability a lot. Many of our customers had to close their businesses, but we did not stop servicing them because they still needed security. We let them go a couple of months without paying, and some of the gyms are still trying to recover, so we're working out payment plans, DePiro explains. That hurt us, but it allows them to stay in business, which will make a long-term customer for us. I'm not looking to make the big score. I'd rather have a customer that pays me $1,000 a year for decades than a customer that pays $10,000, then walks away and I never talk to them again. Demand for IT services grew during the pandemic because cybersecurity became a growing concern for small businesses. AdvisorSmith, a New York-based research and analytics firm, reported that 42% of small businesses experienced a cyber attack in the year leading up to November 2021. According to their survey, roughly 24% were phishing attacks, 19% were data breaches, 16% were malware executed by malicious software, 15% were defined as denial of service or DOS attacks when a network or system is flooded with malicious traffic, and 11% were ransomware attacks. The remaining 15% were undefined cyber attacks. Ransomware is the biggest threat to cybersecurity because of how it is evolving, and phishing is a huge scam that is constantly happening. In fact, ransomware is usually gotten via email, DePiro says. One of the latest cyber conundrums is ransomware as a service, which can be purchased on the dark web and easily deployed. In one ransomware incident, a Two Dog Digital client was asked to pay $21,000. We tracked the attack to an apartment building in Croatia. They wanted 3 bitcoins, which at that time were worth about $7,000 apiece, says DePiro, adding his team was able to resolve the conflict for $3,000. In the latest ransomware incident that we dealt with, the person wanted $3.6 million and would not negotiate on the price. The client did not pay the ransom, and Two Dog Digital was able to recover all of their data. However, cyber attacks on smaller businesses are being used increasingly as gateways to larger businesses. It's not just that we come in and lock up your stuff. We look through everything to see what you're worth, which clients you're working with, what kind of information you have on corporate executives, Henderson explains. Cyber attacks could mine your information to go after the bigger companies that are your clients, and you might not even know anyone has been through your system. The company currently manages about 1,500 endpoints, meaning individual computers, not counting networking gear or other support systems. On a daily basis, they may issue 17 to 20 tickets for service, but that doesn't reflect the volume of service they provide. About 80% of the work we do, the customer doesn't even know we're doing. We have hundreds of procedures in place, and we leverage our software to monitor all of our clients' computers, says DePiro, who had his first computer job at age 12. When I joined the Marines, they were going to make me a radio repairman, but I said I was much better computer guy. The major told me if I could fix his computer that had been broken for a week, he'd make me a computer guy. 9 minutes later, his computer was working, and I was in computer class the next day. And we also have a couple of news items in the 52 Shades of Success section. Study reveals increasing climate change commonalities. A survey of more than 10,200 U.S. adults conducted in early May by Pew Research Center found surprising consensus on some aspects of climate change. The vast majority of respondents, 90%, would favor planting a trillion trees to absorb carbon emissions and reduce effects of climate change. Similarly, a large majority, 79%, favor providing a tax credit that would encourage businesses to develop technology to capture and store carbon emissions. At that time, 72% also said they favor requiring power companies to rely more heavily on renewable sources for energy, and 68% of Americans would back taxing corporations based on the amount of carbon emissions they produce. Barely a month after this survey was conducted, the Supreme Court voted 6-3 to limit how the Clean Air Act can be used to reduce carbon dioxide emissions from power plants, stating in its ruling that the EPA does not have broad authority to regulate greenhouse gas emissions from power plants. And finally, POC overdose deaths rise. In the shadow of COVID-19, other public health concerns continue to escalate, and disparities in access to health care play a significant role. Overdose deaths rose 30% from 2019 to 2020, but the increase was disproportionately reflected among people of color, according to a recently released report from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. In that year, overdose deaths increased 44% for black people and 39% for American Indian, Alaskan Native people. The increase in overdose deaths was largest among younger black people ages 15 to 24, a group that experienced an 86% escalation. In the American Indian Alaska Native community, the largest increase, 49%, was among the 25 to 44 population. And now we turn to the On Eco Devo page, or Economics and Development and Airport, written by Lauren Onasorge. War in Ukraine creates challenges. Ann Schlemmer, CEO of Durham-based software developer Percona, hesitates to use the word safe to describe her Ukrainian colleagues 5 months after Russia invaded the Eastern European country. The company has nearly 24 people in Ukraine, and in the early days of the war, she could hear air raid sirens in the background during video conferences with her employees based in the country. There was no place safe, Schlemmer says. She has had to live with a new kind of normal, one where at any minute her workers could be pulled into the fight. Her engineers could be shelled and team members could be displaced. The team is working in some cases just to have a sense of normalcy, she says. But the dire situation drags on as the war turns into a battle of attrition. And while some of the headlines have subsided, it's still top of mind for me, Schlemmer says. Eric Sopp, a partner at Durham-based web engineering company Usability Dynamics, says work behind the scenes to support his firm's Ukrainian workers continues every day. It sucks for everybody, he says of the situation, which has cost his 15-person firm at least $100,000 when you include the $600 per hour legal fees. Usability Dynamics has funneled money, dump trucks of cash, Sopp says, at the problem, hiring an attorney to look at ways to protect workers. One recent success was winning an H-1B visa lottery to bring an engineer to the U.S. from Ukraine. With so many high-caliber engineers displaced by the war, Sopp sees H-1Bs as one way companies can both support the Ukrainian people and score talent in a tight market. But it's a fluid situation where anything can happen in the meantime, he says. For Schlemmer, whose firm also has about 12 employees in Russia and 2 in Belarus, her team is stable. But that could change at any minute, she says. RDU Airline seeing gains in business travel. From Delta Airlines to American Airlines, Raleigh-Durham International Airport's biggest carrier say a corporate comeback is coming. Executives at RDU Airlines told analysts recently that they're all seeing progress, particularly in international business flying, something officials attribute to the decision to loosen COVID testing restrictions. Pre-pandemic, business travel accounted for around half of RDU's passenger count. As of April, the figure had climbed back to about 40%, according to the airport. Andrew Nocella, United Airlines chief commercial officer, said business demand in the latest quarter reached 75% of the same period in 2019 in terms of volume and 80% in terms of revenue. Business demand continues to grow, but the rate of the progress has slowed in the last few weeks from the growth we saw early in the quarter, he said on a recent earnings call, adding that with the economy potentially worsening, business travel recovery is something we'll be watching carefully. RDU's top airlines in terms of in-plane passenger market share through June: Delta Airlines, 30.5%, American Airlines, 30.4%, Southwest Airlines, 13.7%, United Airlines, 11.1%, and Frontier Airlines, 5.9%. NC layoffs climb in rocky economy. Amid economic uncertainty, layoff activity in North Carolina may be picking up. That's according to data from the NC Department of Commerce that shows 45% of the nearly 2,400 job cuts reported in the state so far this year have come from notices received in just the past month and a half. The largest layoff rounds reported to the state so far in 2022. Denso Manufacturing, 475 layoffs, Greenville. United Furniture Industries, 271 layoffs in High Point. Keolis Transit America, 222 layoffs in Greensboro. Gildan's Mebane Distribution Center, 128 layoffs in Mebane. And Vectrus Mission Solutions Corporation, 122 layoffs in Fort Bragg. NC sets trade deal with UK. The United Kingdom and Governor Roy Cooper's administration have finalized a trade agreement they say will boost the UK and North Carolina. As described by UK officials, the goal is to tackle unnecessary barriers to trade, cut costs, and slash paperwork so British and North Carolinian businesses can work together more efficiently. Emma Wade-Smith, UK Trade Commissioner for North America, says the deal looks to further build the relationship between the two. She says the memorandum of understanding is a manifestation of that ambition to drive more business flows between North Carolina and the UK. And finally, tech firms struggle to keep Russian employees. Triangle Tech firms with footprints in Russia and its ally Belarus are struggling to keep their overseas colleagues on the payroll 5 months into the war between Russia and Ukraine. At Corvist, a Raleigh e-commerce software firm, paychecks for its staff of nine in Belarus have been stopped multiple times. Chief Operating Officer Susan Wall says Corvist had 33 employees in Belarus, but several have moved, including to a new Corvist office in Poland. It continues to be a difficult situation for everybody, Wall says. Corvist has started putting 3 months' worth of salary in escrow for its Belarus employees and has changed banks multiple times. What we're trying to do is really help them so that one part of their life is secure and stable, Wall says. They have their job, they have their relationship with Corvist, and they can count on that as the rest of the world swirls around. At Percona, a Durham software developer with about a dozen employees in Russia and two in Belarus, Russian colleagues have to bank with unsanctioned banks. They're dealing with major currency challenges as Percona can no longer transmit paychecks in dollars. Some have parted ways with employees. SAS Institute initially suspended business in Russia while paying its in-country team of 167 workers, but that has changed. Recent regulatory developments have made it impossible for us to continue paying employees on leave, SAS spokeswoman Shannon Heath says. As a result, we made the difficult decision to end employment of SAS employees in Russia in order to allow them to pursue other more stable opportunities. And now we turn to the On Greater Triangle Growth page, written by Evan Hoopfer. H.H. Hunt Homes targets Lee More counties. Firm will invest between $3 million and $7.5 million in each community. H.H. Hunt Homes, based in Blacksburg, Virginia, is planning three new home communities in Lee County and another two in Moore County. Trying to get affordable homes for people to purchase these days is the driving factor for us, says Vice President William Sutphin, who runs the company's home division in the Raleigh market. The land cost in the Wake County Triangle area is going so high that we've had to look out further to find affordability these days. Sutphin says that in the 5 years he has been at H.H. Hunt, this is the first time the company is venturing into a county other than Wake or Durham. All five of these communities will be comprised of single-family homes, and they are roughly on the same development timeline of starting construction in the next 30 to 45 days, Sutphin says. He says the company is investing between $3 million and $7.5 million in each community. Sutphin added that it's hard to know what the homes will be priced at once they're available for purchase because of fluctuating material costs, but he says the target price within these communities is in the $300,000s. H.H. Hunt has a sizable presence in the Triangle. The company ranked number 21 on Triangle Business Journal's annual list of largest home builders in the area, closing on $58 million worth of home contracts in 2020. The average price of an H.H. Hunt home in the Triangle in 2020 was $421,443, according to TBJ Research. The company is looking elsewhere in the Triangle, too. As Sutphin says, the company is evaluating spots in Johnston and Harnett counties for more communities down the line. DRB Homes buys 200 acres in Harnett County. DRB Homes, formerly known as Dan Ryan Builders, purchased 197.85 acres in Harnett County for over $5.4 million, according to a deed filed June 27. The land sits just northeast of Buies Creek along Sheriff Johnson Road, near where it intersects Mitchell Road. On the land, DRB Homes is planning to build 131 single-family homes ranging from 1,500 to 3,500 square feet, says Jay Colvin, director of land acquisition. He says each lot will be 30,000 square feet or larger. It provides large lots for home buyers, which are getting harder and harder to find, Colvin says. Projected home prices range from in the $300,000s up to the $500,000s, he says. Lidl closing Rocky Mount location. German grocer Lidl is closing a store in Rocky Mount at the end of July. The store, located at 940 North Wesleyan Boulevard, was underperforming, according to Lidl spokesperson Chandler Spivey. This was an underperforming location within our strongly growing store network, and we made a strategic decision to close this location so we can focus on the locations where we are seeing significant growth, Spivey says. Spivey added that the store employs about 20 people, and those employees will be given the chance to relocate to a different store within the Lidl network. The grocer has a location in Wilson, as well as two in Raleigh, according to its website. And in a section called He Said It, a quote from Governor Roy Cooper after the World Golf Hall of Fame announced it was relocating from Florida to Pinehurst, where it was located from 1974 to 1998. Cooper said the state's 520 courses have a $4 billion impact annually on the North Carolina economy. The quote, North Carolina is the home of golf. It is the best place for golf in the world, and Pinehurst is our crown jewel. And finally, a big number. 50,000. That's the square footage of a new speculative industrial building going up in Henderson Vance Industrial Park. Local officials hope to lure a company that will bring jobs to Vance County. And now we turn to the On Healthcare Higher Ed page written by Zach Ezone. UNC system takes space at the Dillon. New lease is part of the system's move out of Chapel Hill. The University of North Carolina system has signed a lease for office space in downtown Raleigh to fulfill a move out of Chapel Hill that's required by state law. The system office is leasing two floors at the Dillon, an 18-story mixed-use building in the city's warehouse district. UNC personnel are expected to move from Chapel Hill into the building by the end of 2022, an office spokesperson confirmed to Triangle Business Journal. The relocation was included in the state budget lawmakers approved last year. The budget allocated $15 million over 4 years to pay for a downtown lease. The bill also stipulates that the lease shall be for no less than 3 years and no more than 4 years, and that operation should relocate by the end of 2022. Despite pushback from a few board members, the Board of Governors voted in May to allow UNC leadership to execute a lease for office space in Raleigh. Members Art Pope, John Fraley, and Leo Daughtry questioned the purpose, cost, and the lack of public transparency around the move. Daughtry has since resigned from the board and joined the State Board of Transportation. It is my opinion that the move from here to Raleigh was done purely on the basis of politics, Daughtry said in the May meeting. The Dillon, which opened in 2018 at 40, 401 West Hargett Street features a total of 221,300 square feet of Class A office space. Developers Kane Realty Corporation of Raleigh and FCP of Maryland sold the property in November 2020 for $236 million to an institutional client advised by MetLife Investment Management. The Dillon is likely to be a temporary home for the UNC system. The state's most recent budget, which Governor Roy Cooper signed July 11, allocates funding and identifies a potential site for a new government complex in downtown Raleigh that would house various state departments involved in education. In the bill, lawmakers proposed building the campus on land at 116 West Jones Street, currently the site of the state's Department of Administration. The legislation would require the Department of Administration to relocate all of its staff and operations before July 1 next year. Demolition of the structure would be completed by October 23, 2023. Liquidia scores patent victory against United Therapeutics. A Morrisville-based pharmaceutical company has earned a victory in a patent dispute with another Triangle drug maker. The Federal Patent Trial and Appeal Board ruled July 19 that all 8 claims of a patent owned by United Therapeutics are unpatentable. Patentable. The ruling follows Morrisville-based Liquidia Technologies filing a petition contesting the claims to the patent, which relates to an inhalable treatment for pulmonary arterial hypertension. In addition to this patent, Liquidia has filed petitions contesting 2 other United patents that relate to the company's treatment called Tyvaso. Meanwhile, United is suing Liquidia in federal court for patent infringement over the latter's development of a product called Yutrepia, which is an inhaled dry powder formulation of the drug treprostinil for the treatment of pulmonary arterial hypertension. Last November, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration granted tentative approval of Yutrepia, meaning it meets all regulatory standards for quality, safety, and efficacy. But the treatment cannot yet be marketed in the U.S. due to a regulatory stay that expires in October, connected to United's lawsuit. This recent decision by the Patent Board doesn't resolve the ongoing lawsuit, but Liquidia CEO Roger Jeff says it's a step toward Yutrepia potentially receiving final regulatory approval. Biogen scales back in Durham to save costs. A global biotechnology company with hundreds of local employees has scaled back its presence in the Triangle as part of a $1 billion cost savings plan. Following the unsuccessful launch of a treatment for Alzheimer's disease, Biogen in May announced it was cutting expenses, including workforce reductions and real estate consolidation, to support Aduhelm, the Alzheimer's treatment approved by regulators last year. The Massachusetts-based company in March decided to stop using a patient services office space it was leasing in Durham, according to filings with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. The company has found a third party to take over its lease. And in a section called He Said It, we have a quote from Thomas Stith, former president of the NC Community College System, following his sudden resignation July 22, a few days after its board met in a closed session for a mid-year review of presidential goals. "I pray the NC Community College Board will embrace a vision for our system that will meet the needs of our fast-growing and richly diverse state." And finally, a big number, $65 million. That's the investment ECU Health, formerly Vidant Health and partner Acadia Healthcare, are making in a 144-bed behavioral health hospital in Greenville. Construction is expected to begin in 2023, pending regulatory approvals. And now we turn to the On Retail and Restaurants page, written by Laura Brumette. Ironworks lands entertainment spot. Jaguar Bolera will combine bowling, karaoke, cocktails. Jaguar Bolera, a new eatertainment concept, has signed on as a tenant in the Raleigh Ironworks mixed-use development along Atlantic Avenue at East Whittaker Mill Road. Taking up 21,000 square feet of space, Jaguar Bolera will include bowling, karaoke, cocktails, and a food menu marrying Southern and Mexican cuisine. The location is set to open in the second half of 2023. The concept comes from Robert Thompson and his company, Angevin & Company. Raleigh will be the first location of the Jaguar Bolera concept. Last year, Angevin & Company purchased the Frenchman Hotel in New Orleans. The company now operates the hotel, its bar, Midnight Revival, and a tapas bar, Three Saints Revival, in Denver. The Raleigh Iron Workspace is the perfect spot for the first Jaguar Bolera, Thompson says. Young, smart tastemakers are moving here for career opportunities in tech, life sciences, and other industries. Jaguar Bolera is set up to cater to those individuals who are looking for experiential socialization more often than sitting across from each other at a four-top table. The first phase of Raleigh Iron Works is slated to open later this year. The project is a joint venture between Raleigh's Grub Ventures and Atlanta's Jamestown. Thompson is planning to hire around 225 people next year to staff the location. On the entertainment side, Jaguar Bolera will offer 10 full-length duck pin bowling lanes, darts, board games, karaoke rooms, and craft-making programs. But 85% of the location's business will be food and beverage, Thompson says. Jaguar Bolera will feature a scratch kitchen where wood-fired cooking pays homage to Raleigh's City of Oaks name, he says. The project is Thompson's first in the state. He considered deals in Charlotte, but none came to fruition. Jenny's Splendid Ice Cream targets Raleigh. Popular brand Jenny's Splendid Ice Cream is coming to the Village District. The Scoop Shop will be taking over a 1,000-square-foot space at 2012 Cameron Street, formerly occupied by the local Squirrel Gift Shop. Construction on the space is expected to begin soon, with the spot likely opening later this fall. The ice cream shop has garnered national attention recently for its unique flavors. Jenny's first announced its move into the Triangle over a year ago with its Durham location, located at 908 West Main Street in Brightleaf Square. The shop opened this spring. Jenny's has three locations in Charlotte. The Jenny's brand is based in Columbus, Ohio, and was founded in 2002 by James Beard Award winner Jenny Britton. Popular flavors include Brambleberry Crisp, Blackout Chocolate Cake, and celebrity-inspired flavors including Dolly Parton's Strawberry Pretzel Pie. Firm to fill former Advance Auto Campus. Raleigh-based ONUG Communications Incorporated is set to fill the last remaining space in the former Advance Auto Parts campus. ONUG provides engineering, automated design, construction, and project management services. The company was founded in 1999 and has 37 employees. ONUG will move to the 8,624-square-foot space this fall. The need for data support and connectivity in a growing and hybrid market like ours is leading to great demand for engineers, installers, and providers, says Danny Huffman, president of ONUG Communications. We are answering that demand by positioning ourselves to grow with our market, and we expect headcount to rise 20% or greater year over year. And in a section called He Said It, a quote from restaurateur Georgios Bakatsias on opening his new downtown Durham restaurant, Asian-themed Krill, alongside chef Jason Lawless. We're incredibly fortunate to have chef Jason Lawless and such a diverse team on board. And finally, a big number, $11.5 million. The price New York-based Broadstone Net Lease paid for the at-home store, formerly a Target, another public REIT, or REIT, CTO Realty Growth, sold the property located in the Capitol Crossing Shopping Center at 4700 Green Road. And now we turn to the Viewpoint page to read the editor's notebook written by Sugata Mukherjee, editor-in-chief of the Triangle Business Journal. The headline on his column, Strong Dollar Opens Door to Hoard Foreign Goods. On July 26, the International Monetary Fund severely cut its global growth projections, adding that the world's economic growth looks more gloomy and uncertain. For U.S. businesses selling their products to foreign entities, IMF estimates, if they come to fruition, could mean wide-scale layoffs, lower profits, and production shutdowns, and that's because the world may not be able to afford to buy goods and services from Americans. The primary culprit for now is the strengthening of the dollar. Thanks to the Federal Reserve's intentional effort to raise rates to fight inflation and slow down the economy, the dollar has grown stronger and stronger with every month. It now has almost equal value to the euro, which hasn't happened for a long time. That may be great news for American tourists traveling to Europe, but it's bad for businesses that look at foreign companies and wholesalers to distribute such things as agricultural products, tech equipment, non-perishable household items, and machinery. All of it is getting more expensive to foreign customers with every passing day, and things are expected to get worse. But just as the current conditions are bad for exporters, it's great for companies looking to buy foreign goods and services. A strong dollar means U.S. importers will have to pay less in unit costs for the same items and services bought in 2020 or even 2021. This is a big opportunity for businesses that compete with larger companies for U.S. market share. This may be just the time to strike new accords with foreign counterparts to buy more of the goods and services at a lower per unit cost. That in return will allow the U.S. businesses to sell it to American consumers either at a lower price or at a bigger margin. The other major change that is likely going to happen in the next few quarters as the Fed keeps raising rates is companies adding foreign labor through remote hires. In many areas of the world, a slowdown in the economy will open up a new labor force for U.S. companies to hire contractors or even remote workers. And if salaries and contracts are paid in U.S. dollars, it will cost less. Of course, long-term strengthening of the dollar is not good news for businesses. The manufacturing sector will suffer the most, and so will the labor market. During a period when the country's Consumer Price Index, or CPI, is shooting up 8+%, any strategy to reduce costs is good for America, and that plays a role in taming inflation. Moody's Analytics' Mark Zandi estimates that a 10% rise in dollar value against other trading currencies will result in a 0.4% in reduced inflation. It's not much, but every little bit helps. Small businesses are often not in a favorable position when competing against larger companies, but this may be the precise time when they could turn the table around and embrace the new business strategy. Only the nimble and the calculated risk takers will survive the next economic recession in this country, which is not too far away. Global inflation is now forecast to hit 6.6% in advanced economies and 9.5% in emerging market and developing economies this year. So, you show me who is viewing these economic indicators as a glass half full scenario, and I will show you a winner. And now we'll read general stories in the Triangle Business Journal. Highwoods splashes into Dallas with $330 million investment. A Raleigh-based real estate investment trust is entering the Dallas market through a joint venture totaling hundreds of millions of dollars to develop two new office towers. Highwoods Properties is partnering with Granite Properties of Plano, Texas, in a joint venture that's described as a $660 million anticipated investment to fund two developments in the Dallas area, the companies recently announced. Highwoods will own a 50% interest in 23 Springs, a 626,000-square-foot, 26-story office development, including 16,000 square feet of retail in uptown Dallas. The company will also own a 50% interest in Granite Park 6, a 422,000-square-foot, 19-story office development in Plano, north of Dallas. Granite Park 6 is expected to deliver late next year and is 12% pre-leased, according to Highwoods. 23 Springs is expected to deliver in 2025 and is currently 17% pre-leased. Granite Park 6 began construction in December 2021. And that was written by David Pertell. And we'll end with the Business Pulse survey. What is your favorite grocery store in the Triangle? And that turns out to be Wegmans at number one with 34%. Harris Teeter, number two at 33%. Food Lion in third at number 10%. In last place, Walmart and Sprouts Farmers Market at 1%. And we've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.